ladies and gentlemen, to the show that doesn't take itself too seriously, but probably should. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the Fukushima irradiated island change nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody is employed as an energy saver light bulb. And my very special guest is Joe Trinder. Joe, welcome to the program, bro.
Oh, kia ora, Vinny. How are you? It's
somewhat fabulous is my standard line.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear.
What have you got for us, Joe?
Okay, well, today what I'm going to talk to you about is the unitary plan and for Auckland City. And what we've got in the unitary plan is what's called a metre, which is option 4 of the new proposed motorway that is going through Mangere Otahuhu.
You mean the one that's not more kind of less like a unitary plan and more like a urinary plan because they're just pissing on the community by building a freaking motorway through it?
Well, that's it precisely, Vinny. I couldn't have put it better. What's going to happen in this option 4 is hundreds of homes, marais, schools are all going to be demolished, and they're going to put a 4-lane motorway right through our community here in Mangere in Otahuhu. For all your listeners that are overseas in the United States, et cetera, who don't know much about Auckland City or Mangere Otahuhu,
it's Mangere kind of like the Harlem. It's kind of like the Harlem of Auckland.
Well, Mangere is located to our international airport, and it's where we have our international airport. So when people first come into our country, they come into our community first. So what it is, it's a predominantly brown community of Polynesian people, Māori, and also European New Zealanders as well. So,
incidentally, a very cheap place to buy alcohol. A friend of mine did a personal survey trying to find where the place you could buy the cheapest alcohol is, and he found it very interesting that it was a neighbourhood of ethnic minorities that were given access to the cheapest alcohol in Auckland. Don't you think that's funny?
Yeah, I think it's a wee bit weird. I'd like to hear more about that as well.
I talked to a woman last night who said, you know how easy it is to get alcohol in South Auckland? I have an $817 tab that I owe to a liquor store. That's how easy it is.
Oh, gosh.
Also, I thought it illustrated it quite well. You know, I was quite a shock when I hear this. And I was just thinking how communities get purposely kind of destroyed. They do the same thing in America. In the projects, they just put a liquor store and a gun store in every freaking corner and boom, everybody's at each other's throats, families destroyed, everything's fracked.
Yeah, well, a good analogy of that you mentioned, Vinny, is we've got fried chicken stores galore in Māori, and we've also got, as you mentioned, the cheapest liquor stores. So we're suffering out of all of this big super city of the new super city of Auckland. The brown communities are having to carry the can for the rest of the super city. So yeah, it's not fair.
Well, I think that all this kind of fast food is actually weaponized. You know, it's got to be. If we were using food as a weapon, could you think of a more brilliant delivery system?
No, I couldn't actually. It's a great way to kill off community. Fried chicken them.
Hey. What's heart disease? Isn't it like the leading cause of death? Second leading cause? Actually, the leading cause of death is the Ministry of Health. But that's just according to the Ministry of Health.
Well, moving back to this motorway, we just had a conversation with the Mayor of Auckland, Len Brown, and he says that he supports this. Last week, what we had is we had a conversation with Manukau Ward Councillor Arthur Anai. He also says that he supports it. And why he supports it is he said to us he wants to keep Auckland moving at the expense of hundreds of people's homes. So,
well, obviously he was interested in keeping them moving because they'll all have to move out.
Well, you're not wrong. And so as he was walking away, walking around way disgusted, one of his supporters yelled out to us, "Buy a car!" Well, what's that going to do to you if you haven't got a home? Yeah.
You sleep in it, I suppose.
Oh, sounds lovely. Yeah. Yeah. How generous of Arthur. Also, what's happened is we've created an organization called Respect Our Community Campaign, and this has managed to galvanize the whole population of Mangere. They're all starting to meet on this, and they're starting to oppose the Mayor Len Brown and also Jerry Brownlee, Member of Parliament Jerry Brownlee's proposal to put this motorway through. Now, what the idea is of the government is they want it feasible for National Party voters out in Botany to be able to drive over the top of our community to get to the airport, so that easier for them to get to the airport. They don't care in the slightest.
It's like a wheeled version of just stepping on everybody to get where you want.
I know. It's terrible.
Well, the thing is, this is not an isolated incident. They do this with motorways all the time. I think there was a motorway being made north of Wellington somewhere or whatever. There's a documentary made about it by Boz O'Sullivan called Through the Heart. And what they do is they come in, and the community would actually think about a particular idea of what would be good for their community. And they do a little bit of liaising with the government. They do a little bit of research. They get some consultation for the community, and they come up with a really good plan. And the government says, yeah, that's a really good plan too. But what about this plan and this plan? They go, no, we don't like that at all. It goes, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to word it similarly, make the plans sound really, really similar, and then put it to the public to a vote. And they just use all this manipulation in order to get what they want. Can I ask you a question?
Yes, certainly.
Who certainly is in charge of this particular scenario here in terms of the building by the motorway? It's not anybody by chance who's a paid member of the Committee for Auckland, formerly the Business Roundtable Group, which basically make all of the big contracting decisions in this frickin' city. Costs you $10,000 a year to be a member, bro. And all the biggest banks and everything, and all the contractors and every organization you can think of is a member of it. They run this town.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Vinny. It's what it is they want to tar seal every single part of Auckland City, and it's big business comes first with this government, and what they want to do is they want to build big motorways at the expense of families, loved ones, and communities. And if they tar seal the whole place, then they'll manage to get thousands and millions of dollars in profits. And it's big business driving it. You're absolutely right.
Who are the contractors that are being employed to build this motorway? Fletcher's?
I'd assume so.
You see, Fletcher Building is a really corrupt family, people have been alleging. And I do think that somebody else alleged that they had, I think maybe the government owned about 30% of Fletcher Building. And so what they're doing is they're contracting to themselves at the same time. It's like a mafia. You've got the government on the one hand just sitting there and taking the will of big business and then taking a little cut off the side. It's like taking a snort of cocaine when you delivered a pound and everybody else misses out on the party.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Oh, well, Vinny, I'd just like to explain, just recently I'm running for City Council for Manukau Ward and also for Local Board for Mangere Otahuhu with the John Minto ticket. There it is there. That's John Minto. He's running for the mayoralty race of Auckland City against the incumbent Mayor Len Brown. And I'd like to explain some of our policies that would really upset these big businesses and contractors. What we're offering is free and frequent public transport. How does that sound, Vinny?
Sounds expensive.
Well, when you put it in this terms of putting through a motorway, you're looking at around about $400 million a year just to keep building more roads. it would be a lot cheaper to get everyone on trains and buses and stop traffic congestion than us build tar seal roads everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I do believe this is a good idea. Hey, interesting point on traffic congestion. Do you know why traffic happens? Because somebody hit the brakes. And that's about it. If everybody was just cruising through without stopping, traffic congestion wouldn't actually exist. Isn't that interesting? I envisioned a great idea. You know how all the traffic lights are programmed?
Yeah.
You could actually clear a path for people for significant periods of time and ease the traffic congestion that way. And I've found that all of these little, you know, when you go on the freeway or the motorway or whatever, and there's these little cameras and signals and all this sort of stuff, you know, waiting to go on to it. I remember when I first started driving, none of that stuff was there. Traffic was just as bad. They haven't done nothing.
Yeah, definitely.
What the hell is the point? You know, it's like nothing in transport is being spent on anything freaking useful. It's all about control as far as I've seen it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
I mean, now they're putting up red light cameras. Who's there to testify? What's the legal ramification or basis of that kind of stuff? In the United States, a couple of people have found out that the red light cameras are unconstitutional, violates their rights. There's no actual human witnessing the event. Nobody's hurt. Nobody's killed, you know?
Well, it's revenue gathering. That's what it is. People who can't afford to pay it.
So we're the suckling pig that is being suckled at by multiple large protruding ticks that suck 900% of their own body weight and blood out of the community and then leave you a nice bit of Lyme's disease just to spite you. I see this kind of almost insect infestation of corporate scumbaggery taking over the city, taking over the country, indeed taking over this world.
Yeah, it's the 1%ers that are sucking the 99% of us dry. And it's not acceptable.
How do we fight back against them, Joe?
Well,
with free and free and frequent public transport. Let's think about this. How frickin' cheap is it to make a car? You know, they've got cars that are made out of industrial hemp now. You know that? They got fuel of hemp. You can get like, I don't know, four times or three times as much or whatever out of an acre with hemp than you can with bloody trees or any other forms of crops. I was thinking, you know, it'd be really awesome if they legalize medicinal and industrial marijuana.
Yeah, well,
but you can't do that with a bylaw, can you?
No.
Well, and also the problem is the reaction to the public, because there's always this demonization and history of propaganda against the use of it. It was in every doctor's bag. But getting off topic, in terms of Auckland, in terms of transport, there's also another question, density of population. The frequency of a transport is not terribly useful if it takes like 15, 20, 30 minutes to get to a bus station somewhere. There's a lot of spread out areas in Māngere and all around the city because we've been building out, we've just been spreading out, and unfortunately, they did the same thing in Los Angeles, and the unfortunate thing happens is that nobody uses the public transport because it's really inconvenient. There simply is not the infrastructure or the population density to necessitate them. And so everybody goes to the car. The problem is the planning is not good. Either that or it was deliberately set out and paid off by corporate interests over a long period of time to favour the personal automobile and oil and tyres and the entire industry. This happened in the United States, I believe. many initial suburban settlement zones back in the 50s when the suburbanisation was really starting to kick off, a whole bunch of companies represented by Rockefeller Oil and so on and so forth came in and scrapped local electric train systems, scrapped local tram systems, scrapped local busing, you know, everything. And I probably would say the exact same thing has happened to this country, don't you think? The same scumbaggery forces at work. I see the exact same pattern. In order to reverse this pattern, there has to be a complete overhaul. Would John Minto, you reckon, outlaw this committee for Auckland? Because if I know one thing, I know this. There ain't a frickin' corporate scumbaggery incident that goes on in the city that ain't okayed by them. And that is not okay with me.
Yeah, well, I've been speaking to John. He wants to stop Auckland City being tar sealed. I mean, it's one of the most of a city of its size, about 1.5 million people. It's one of the most tar sealed roads of its type in the world. It's just got roads everywhere, and there's no investment in infrastructure and railway or public transport, and that's why if we were to make it. We'll make it like every public service, like whether you go to the doctors or go to the library, or it's actually free. So it's achievable.
On. Are there any models that have happened elsewhere in the world where they have tried to make for free and frequent public transport with the spread out layout and geography of Auckland and all of the different things that are going on with that? For example, we don't even have a rail going over the Harbour Bridge that cuts off the frickin' North Shore from any kind of rail access. Has there been any examples of this before?
There are. There's two very good examples. One of them
I'm sorry, but we're going to a break now. One of them was Estonia. Hold that thought.
And the other one, yep.
Yeah, hold that thought, and we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Joe Trinder is my guest from Mana. Welcome back. Yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go freaking nuts. And my very special guest is Joe Trinder. We're going to talk about some candidates and some policies from the Mana Party. Now, this would be interesting, because I always like to hear about people's backstories and what they're actually, you know. It's almost like you could be forgiven for forgetting there's an Auckland election going on right now. Is there much public interest out there, Joe?
Oh, definitely, it's huge. This is probably one of the biggest local elections ever in the history of Auckland, because it's now the super city, so it affects about 1.5 million people. So this vote here is probably just as important as voting in the general elections for government, because Len Brown, the mayor of Auckland of the super city, the Lord Mayor, is the second most powerful man in the country under John Key. So it's really important we all get out there and vote. Yeah. What I'll do is I'll explain to you some of the cities overseas that have free public transport. There's Chengdu in China, has free public transport. And also in Tallinn, the capital of Estonia, in January this year, they also managed to get free public transport. And one of our candidates, Roger Fowler, he went over to a conference on free public transport over in Tallinn in Estonia. And they had big meetings, people from Chengdu turned up as well. And the economic benefits of free public transport were huge. It injected money into the economy. People were on work to time, were on time to work. There was less loss of production because they'd ungridlocked all the streets. So people who didn't want to get around in cars could just get on public transport, and it saved absolute millions and millions invested back into the economy that they could spend on more roads if they needed to.
So basically, the thing about free and public, basically, the thing about just easing congestion in general is it stops people being delayed in what they got to go and do. Let's say you're a delivery person or whatever, and your job takes an extra half an hour because of frickin' Auckland traffic. Ah, how much more money could you make collectively across an entire city for everybody who has to commute, where suddenly that commuting buzz, that congestion doesn't exist, and productivity is free to flow? The benefits could be unbelievable. Like, imagine that. How, if you, I remember when I used to commute, what is it, like an hour and a half about in a car? And for a trip that should have taken, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes every single day for an entire year. Mate, imagine the savings of time, of money. Because it also burns even extra gas when you, when you're just sitting there idling, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah. So one of the other parts that we've got to complement that policy is we also want to put free wireless internet on it. So if you're there with your, with your smartphone, and you, you can sort of just go to your favorite websites, it's all free. And so going to work, instead of spending an hour fighting through traffic, trying to get through traffic, you're going to end up at work having just read the Herald and relaxed, and it's an easier day for you because you're not driving, you're not fighting through traffic, you're just sitting on a bus, reading the Herald, taking it easy. And so companies are going to get higher productivity out of their employees as well, who are not coming to work stressed after an hour's battling through traffic. Yeah.
Or late into the office because, oh, the traffic was just terrible today. Because have you noticed when it rains? Whenever it rains, most Aucklanders who normally use public transport suddenly go back to their cars.
Well, precisely. It people are going to turn up to work on time because the ones who do take their cars, they're not going to be stuck in traffic gridlock. And also the ones that take public transport are going to time it better. They're going to know the times of their bus, train, et cetera. So it's really good policy, and I think it's been really well thought out. And I think that...
Talked about these examples like Estonia and so on and so forth. Are there any numbers or figures things of a deeper detail that we can look into these examples? Because if we're talking about time and productivity, I mean, do they know exactly how much they got back?
Well,
per dollar invested?
From what Roger said, the whole economy uplifted. There was absolutely millions and millions. And this is just since January that they started that in Tallinn, Estonia. So we've got an example of a similar size city, approximately about 1 million to 1.5 million, and it's a complete success. And we're choosing not to adopt this. It's just, I don't understand. Why not?
Okay, yeah. So there's the one policy, and there's got a lot of good points in there. What about your candidates? Who else have you got behind you? Because Roger Fowler, I know, was a leader of Kia Ora Gaza for a time. He actually led kind of like a convoy, a New Zealand delegation sort of into Gaza at one point. And who else have you got? Because John Minto's a veteran protester. He's been basically a figure of protesting aficionado since the Springbok tour in the 80s. And then you got Hone Harawira, of course, but he's not running in this local election, is he?
Yeah, no, he's not, but he's fully supporting us, Honey. But I'll explain our candidates. For the mayoral candidate, we've got John Minto, and he helped defeat apartheid in South Africa and the Halt All Racist Tours. So this man knows how to mobilise people. He fought against Rob Muldoon and the national government and disrupted oppression and racism so it couldn't enjoy a mere sports game. Roger Fowler, Roger with Will Ilalia, he helped Pacific Island migrants when the police squad, they had a red squad called a red police squad, they were hunting down Pacific migrants during what we call the Dawn Raids. And Roger was also at Bastion Point with Joe Hawke. He even got married there. And Roger has actually been punched up by Sir Robert Muldoon, the former Prime Minister of New Zealand.
That's a badge of honour.
I know, mate, it is. Yeah. And but Roger's always fighting for the little man. People at Gaza Strip, he's always there fighting for good causes. He's a great man. We also have another candidate, a Samoan candidate, called James Papali'i. In 1981, at the Whole Tall Racist Tours, James stood face-to-face, fearlessly, in full body armour, against the police red squad in a violent confrontation where he stood his ground without fear, mind you. And there's a historic photo of James where he faced up right up to the red squad by himself, just standing right there. And there's tear gas going off, and he just fearlessly stood up to them. We've also got another candidate, Kayla Filimahala. She's a 18-year-old young Tongan teenage girl. And what she wants to do is she wants to help our young people in the community get engaged, because the future of Auckland are the youth, the young people of Māori, Otahuhu and South Auckland. And we really need to invest in them. And myself, I'm the tangata whenua candidate for Māori, or as we say, people of the land here in New Zealand. And I'm of Ngāti Awa descent. And I believe that us Māori, we've got a contribution to make to the super city, and we can contribute as well. And some of our policies that we've got that you would find really good is we want to build 20,000 council homes in Auckland. So we want them to be cheap and affordable. And what this will do is it'll force down all of the rental prices, because here in Auckland, rental prices have just gone, it's unbelievable. It's impossible to live here almost, because the price of housing is it's extraordinary.
Everybody's coming to Auckland. I think it's something like out of 50,000 immigrants we have in a year of a country of 4 million people. That's quite a lot, isn't it? I think about 40,000 of them settle in Auckland, and we're only building about 30,000 houses a year, and there's like a shortfall of like a huge amount anyway. It's actually really hard for some people to even find somewhere to live.
Yeah. The hardest people is on people who are first home buyers. It's absolutely impossible for them to find an affordable house, because we've got very wealthy migrants coming in, snapping up all the houses and not renting them out. They're just investment properties that they get on cheap loans from international banks. So it's housing has gotten out of control in Auckland City especially, and there's no distribution of business across the country.
I think this is one of the interesting parts about this. And have you heard of the Chinese ghost cities?
Heard about one in North Korea next to the border. There's a ghost city.
No. I'm not sure you understand. You know, a city the size of Seattle or Chicago or Auckland or something like that. The Chinese government goes into the middle of nowhere and builds the whole city from scratch. Right? They got dozens and dozens of them. You can go Google search the images on your computer, man. It is freaking unbelievable. They have these massive metropolitan areas where nobody has moved into yet. And I was just wondering, how exactly are we going to solve the population issue in Auckland? We're talking about projected virtually endless growth, but I'm not sure that there are going to be many viable alternatives, because
it looks like the city's being forced into a sort of Agenda 21, sort of pack 'em and stack 'em slave blocks next to bloody train tracks kind of lifestyle. And that's not New Zealand culture, bro. That's just, that's like fitting in with the globalist culture of the world. Everybody's got that kind of sort of thing to deal with now, man. Not in New Zealand, bro.
I'm really glad that you touched on that point, Vinny, because just recently in Glen Innes, they went and demolished a whole lot of state houses where very poor people lived. And so what they could do is hand this land over to property developers so they would have a nice seaside sort of mansion there and stuff. But the thing is, what they're doing with this is they're rolling it out all across the country. Glen Innes was only the first of many. They're going to be doing that here in Māngere. Every single community that's not as wealthy as their own communities is going to get demolished and turned into whatever they want. And they're going to roll this across the nation. And we need to be prepared for this.
Oh, yeah, we do. And people need to watch their local leaders very fracking closely. When Glen Innes happened, you know what they did? They paid them $100, just $100 to come to this meeting and so on and so forth, you know, free booze, free food, whatever. And then it was like almost invite only of all of the little community leaders around the Glen Innes, you know, even the people from Marae and other groups. And they basically just paid them to give them the okay to do it, as long as they'd get a little bit of a slice of the pie.
Oh, were you there and amongst that, Vinny, were you?
No. I interviewed these ladies out in GI like a year or two ago, and they weren't invited, but they managed to get their way in. And they saw this entire meeting take place, and apparently that's common practice as well. This whole fricking country, like, if people fricking knew just how unbelievably corrupt it is. Okay, look, just imagine for a moment that your prime minister isn't actually like John Key or somebody wearing a suit or whatever. Okay, just imagine for a moment. He's Robert Mugabe. Okay. All right. Now you suddenly understand just how corrupt kind of the infrastructure is, the cops on the street and so on and so forth. You know, that's about as close as an example as I can say, because we have a good veil in this country, a veil of officialdom and color of law. These people think that they can get away with things just by telling people that they're an authority figure, and then everybody goes, oh, okay, you're an authority figure. Okay, I'll do exactly whatever you say. You say you've got some kind of statute that I've never seen or never even heard of, and that means that I have to destroy my own home or my business or something like that. Okay, you're an authority figure, no worries. And unfortunately, that hasn't led us into a very good place at all.
Has it?
You know,
people
accuse me of being unprofessional. As far as I'm concerned, bro, the world is currently run by professionals. How's that working out for you?
Not the best, no.
Yeah. No. Some people with some life experience would be very nice. Like a whole group of activists who formed a political party to actually take care. Have you noticed what I know about activists, man? A lot of people don't know what an activist is. An activist is a person who actually takes a personal responsibility for the safety of the human race. And they'd study extremely hard, harder than any university student, for longer. They spend their life at it until they know things that would shock even me. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And they also know solutions. Back in a minute.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone with us. Our needs are now different, and our aims are different. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone with us. The world we knew is gone. The world we
Welcome back.
Get down in the Schwarzenegger sense of the word.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com with the music that almost never stops. And my very special guest is Joe Trinder from Mangere. Now, what does the word Mangere mean? Do you know? I don't know.
It actually means lazy winds in Māori. Yeah.
For some reason, having just recently visited Mangere, I think it's a very appropriate name. It was a bit of a lazy wind.
You're not wrong, Vinnie. Yeah. Okay, well, what I'll do is I'll explain some of our policies that we've got for the Minto for Mayor campaign. What we want to do is we want to offer council workers and also contractors to Auckland City Council a living wage of $18.40. And so what we believe this would do is it would show, lead by example, City Council and government. And so business would actually have to give a living wage as well. So then more New Zealanders would start to all get more affordable wages and a better living wage.
Well, you could do that if you just cut out the contractors and then save about half of the loot.
Yeah,
but the unfortunate thing is with council is that I think doesn't central government give them a certain amount each year or something like that? It kind of works like this. Let's say your budget is $250,000 and you spend $300,000. The next year they then fund you $300,000. So basically it's a race to overspend as much and get into as much freaking debt as possible. And the way that they've done this is by getting private contractors to do everything. Consultancy fees everywhere. PricewaterhouseCoopers has made a lot of money. A lot of money. There is a shockingly large amount of people on the take with this particular system that we've got running Auckland right now. If things were done more in-house and paid a living wage, that'd be nice. The old borough council wasn't doing too bad. Before they started the first amalgamations, everybody's rates have gone up. Back in the day, you have a multi-man task force, practically, in a truck, a council worker. Trees down, something else happens, whatever. You call the council worker, he comes out and does it. It's his job, he gets paid a salary. You get a contractor to do something, got to have the contract, timesheets, all of this other kind of jazz, consultancy, negotiation, BS. And it costs a shockingly large amount of money, doesn't benefit the people whatsoever. It's kind of like, what the hell is the point in having a government if you get contractors to do everything? Who then owns the government? It's a contractor's world.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Vinnie, on this, because what's happened in this option 4 of the Metre motorway is central government has dictated to local government, we'll give you so many millions of dollars if you run a motorway right through the middle of Mangere. And so we can't do anything with our local board or our councillors. They can't fight for it because it's the decision's being made at central government. So it's taking the power out of the hands of the people. And it's placing it in with the halls of power. So,
That's an interesting side effect of the super city, don't you think, ladies and gentlemen? Instead of having 9 different local councils that you have to bend over in order to shaft the government's will on all the people, now you've only got one bunch of people to bribe. The bunch of people who are incidentally wealthy enough through the financiers and so on and so forth to run a campaign across an entire city of 1.5 million people.
Yeah. Our next policy that I'd like to explain is Robin Hood rates. So how Robin Hood works, Robin Hood rates work is we live in a predominantly poorer part of Auckland, so we're not a wealthy community. So why should we have to pay the same rates in the super city as somewhere like Paratai Drive that has multi-million dollar mansions and yachts out the front of it? So it's only fair that poorer communities should pay less in their rates and wealthier communities should have to pay more. Another issue I wanted to raise is that because of central government and local government being ignored, Māngere is on the verge of being destroyed and split up into four ghettos on the sideline of a major motorway. So when people go and get their voting papers and they take them off the fridge, they have to think carefully on what extraordinary times the super city is in. And we really need an extraordinary team who have fought against oppression and have stood up to powerful national governments their whole lives without fear, outgunned and outmanned. And that's why we need activists. When these sort of situations are happening, you need your John Mintos, your Roger Fowlers, your James Papales. You need these men in local government to help fight central government, because they know how to fight. These men have defeated national governments before. You'd agree, wouldn't you, Vinny?
Well, I do agree to an extent. However, I fear the corruption of the system tends to either make you leave it or become one with it. And I don't think the activists will fit in nicely, and they might leave. Because there really is quite a horrific system at play here, and I can just see the headlines, false made up allegations, scandals, and demonization, and so on and so forth. Oh, they're wrecking the city, you know, after you steal the election. All of these kind of pompous scum who think that the city belongs to them, rising up against you. And having all the great people that actually supported you and got you into government just sit back and watch. That's my great fear.
Yeah, that they could be corrupted. Well, I've seen John Minto from when he was in his 20s. He was always fighting for the little man. And he hasn't changed. He still is fighting for the little man. He's fought against apartheid. And so I don't see that putting him in a position of authority, he would all of a sudden turn coat and start to listen to corporations and
But that's the thing. Considering he's been elected into an authority, whose authority does he stand under? Is he a supreme authority, a sovereign authority at the point when he becomes mayor? No, he's not. He'll still have to do exactly whatever the central government tells him, wouldn't he? Or would he fight them tooth and nail every step of the way and be prepared to launch some kind of insurrection if he disagreed so strongly?
Well, I think he's more in the insurrection, and he really would. He would take the fight. I mean, you saw him in 1981 run on with a couple of hundred protesters onto the rugby field in Hamilton and absolutely decimate an All Blacks game. So he's more there going to put up resistance. I don't think so that he comes to compromise at all with big national governments. So like our current mayor, Len Brown, who likes to come to compromise, he's prepared to fight tooth and nail to stop anything like this happening.
One would suggest then that probably John Minto won't win. What's he polling? Because the reason why I say this is because elections invariably, as far as I've seen, tend to favour the worst candidate, but the best of the worst candidates. Both sides are usually really, really corrupt. Both sides of the front runners will be really, really corrupt, and they'll be the one that the big business and corporates want. Because, incidentally, it's the upper classes and suburbs and stuff like that that regularly vote, and the rest of the communities who would actually benefit from some kind of person of representative fashion to take control of the city in their name and their benefit. It's nowhere to be seen at the polling booth. That's the sad thing, mate, because the community's down so much and people don't really have the time or the inclination to understand the political game, let alone participate.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, I think what John's doing is he's going out in there into Len Brown's base. He's going out to the South Auckland communities, into the markets, the flea markets and stuff, and he's really appealing out to those people that are the, what you'd call them, the non-voters. And it's people that, you know, they like what he did in 1981 and the Hotel Racist tours. And those people, the activist-y type, I think those people are a lot of non-voters, and he's got that appeal out there to actually take away Len Brown's base. You are
winning. Well, we should hope so. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Joe Trinder from Mana.
Your weapons are already in hand. Reach within you and find the means by which to gain your freedom. Fight with tools. Your fate and that of everyone you know depends on it.
Women and children, front lines, log on, tune in, stand and be counted. Wounded station in the belly of the vulture. Watch your back, there's no civilians, women, children, front lines, listen. Consider this a distant, early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution, gathering dust particles, funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Well, there's only two rules. One is imposed by the government, and one imposed by the vicious tyrants at the American Freedom Radio Central headquarters in Texas. We're not allowed to swear, and we have to have fun. I think you'll figure out who imposed which rule. No, we're not finished, Joe.
Oh, sorry.
We still have a whole hour. Now, think about this. Imagine for a moment, just envision, that there's a city in the South Pacific that is well-versed in how to run a frickin' city, how to make it cheap, how to support people in the right ways, how to facilitate flow, how to make the economy work, how to not violate people's rights, how to not overimpose on their business standing if they ain't hurting anybody, how to take a hands-off approach whilst carefully guiding the growth of the city. Imagine that. Wouldn't that feel like a lovely place to live? In a temperate climate? With the height of technology and Western culture? That sounds like frickin' paradise, don't you think? A really cool tourist destination. Incidentally, Auckland is one of the highest destination hotspots for New Zealand there is. There's a hell of a lot to see and do around this city.
Yeah, there certainly is.
And it's a primate city as well. You can tell primate cities among many countries. What they are is they're a city that has more than twice the population of the next biggest city. It'll be basically the central hub of virtually the entire country. That's what it's turned into, with the harbour and the commerce and the inevitable scumbaggery that comes with it. And so, is Auckland sucking the lifeblood out of the country? This is a big debate that people have been having. I wanted to know what your position is on it.
Well, you could say that about any city in the world. You could say that about Sydney. You could say that about Brisbane. Because last year in 2012, approximately 650,000 New Zealanders left New Zealand. So that's the population of Māori, the Māori population. And this is huge amounts of people. So you could say that people are all moving to Auckland and Auckland's sucking the lifeblood out of New Zealand. But you could say that about Sydney. You could say that about Perth.
Well, you know what that tells me? That there's a global network syndicate at hand here who are fracking everybody simultaneously and taking the cream off the top.
Yeah, you. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
One global plan, a whole ideology of people that have huge business interests, fingers in every pie, and boom, they got the whole thing stitched up, bro. We need to expose some scumbaggery here. I mean, do you think that perhaps lying to people, taking their money without lawful authority, making up bogus legislation, destroying people's homes, getting people arrested for no good reason, maybe even slapping on brutal force and what have you, do you think that would warrant some jail time? I mean, could you imagine if anybody normal had done anything like this? You know, like by force with a shotgun or so on and so forth. You know, have a trial that lasts for 2 days and he goes to prison for the rest of his life. And then all of these rest of these people, they love it. They just keep going on with it. And there's people actually still supporting them. That's what I don't get. Everybody in this city has been completely destroyed from frickin' rates, which I think was a misspelling. There was initially meant to be a P in that word there because they rape the living bejesus out of every single resident in the city. It goes up and up and up. When they put in the super city, Len Brown goes, oh, it's going to not go up even further than the rate of inflation. We're going to keep it to the rate of inflation, all right? You're like, oh, yeah, that's very nice. But there's a law inside the freaking council that they can make up what the rate of inflation is. Jesus, they've got it stitched. They've got it stitched up. There's a massive ball of corruption. I do think that this needs to be addressed. This should be a central campaign issue, the corporate corruption of Auckland, because all of its problems, from the motorways to the private contracting and everything like that, are caused by it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Vinny. One of the... the policies that John Minto wants to introduce to the Auckland Super City is what you do is you take the living wage of $18.40, and then what you do is if someone's that person's manager, well, they get twice the living wage or three times the living wage. So what it is it's a progressive wage system. So say the mayor, instead of them getting an imaginary amount of $500,000 that they just pick out of thin air, what they'll do is they'll tether that to the lowest wage person in city council. So he's allowed, say, 10 times the minimum wage person of that organisation, of the city council. So let's say he can have 10 times.
Is that $180 an hour?
Yeah, it probably would be. I'd assume that's what a mayoralty candidate would be more suitable, as opposed to what they're on now, which is about 25 times the living wage.
Well, so, even charging $180 an hour, that's like half what a good lawyer would cost you, even less than half of that.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's fair if we structure it. The CEO of the Auckland City Council is allowed five times the living wage. The management, maybe three to four. And so everyone knows in this progressive pay system how much they're getting paid. And it's only fair as us as ratepayers.
Don't you think jealousy might break out if everybody knows what everybody else is being paid? Because you know how, like, if somebody asks you how much do you earn and that person's kind of like a bit like, I don't really want to tell you or something like that. If you knew what department we're in, you would know.
Oh, that information's public on the Auckland City website, anyhow, council website.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I can go in and see how much Len Brown takes away in, like, private contract payoffs, do I? I'm joking. Come on, Len. You know I love you. You know I love you.
Well, I don't believe he publishes those backhanders, as most politicians would maybe avoid doing that.
But yeah, especially if the person giving you the donation is Kim.com and you're the former mayor of Auckland.
Actually, I'd like to talk to you about Kim, who is one of your fans, I've heard. I think Kim has got a lot to bring to this country and to Auckland City. As what we're looking at doing is this government's looking at mining everything and environmentally destroying the country. What we should look at is look at people like Kim.com to raise the economy and turn New Zealand into the land of a long white cloud. So let's go out, instead of building dairy farms, let's build IT farms and data farms, and where the whole world stores all their data, and we pimp ourselves out as the IT sweatshop of the South Pacific. And this is, you're going to earn a lot more money than if we go and cut up all our resources, knock down and go mining everything. It is the best way to build our economy. And I think that Kim should be at the forefront of that, and he would be a great leader for this country to look at that. Well, I mean, how do you feel about New Zealand becoming the land of the great white cloud?
The great white cloud. Ah, a technology-based individual island-chained nation tends to work for people like Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong. Malaysia's doing it rather nicely. Didn't work out too bad for the British either. Does anybody think that maybe when people are proposing policies to, quote-unquote, and I hate these words, grow the economy, create jobs, all these weasel words that basically mean handing the country over to foreign scum who have no interest and have no loyalty to any flag, they are taking over the country. This is the unfortunate business, because whenever we talk about anything from John Key and all of these National Party representatives, have you noticed that there's not a soul among them? You know, they're actually like, they're horrific people, you know? Like, this is the kind of people you would avoid at a party, you know, bro? What is going on here? Dude, I was up late last night and I came up with a brilliant idea for a rap song. And it's listing all of the things, well, only just a tiny few of the things that John Key and the government have done. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Now, we've got the GCSB and the TICS. His name's John Key. For a liar, he's the best. Cracking open our nice national parks for mining. Corporate cronies and his mates seem to take a shining. He's got shares in uranium and Jackson Mining. It's amazing how TV news can be so blinding. Want to restrict our snapper but not a commercial operation. That's privatising oceans, if I understand the equation. You got fracking consents to pollute the water table. Hydraulic chemicals and pressure make the land unstable. Deep sea oil bids going to... Deep sea oil bids going cheap for oil barons. Gulf of Mexico, BP, now the land is barren. And the Exxon Valdez, John Key, please. Wipe that bankster smile off your face before it's too late. We're in more debt now. that's like the first of three verses, man.
Oh, Vinny, I think you missed your calling, mate. I think you could be a political gangster rapper. Seriously.
I already am, bro. I've got a couple of tracks on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com on the Parky Hutchies page. And I was thinking, bro, hey, on the 5th of October, it's the day of action against National and at ALTS Square, 3 p.m. For those of you who are listening on to this. And I'm going to be MC. So I think I could just actually read this out to the crowd, mate. It'd be great, don't you think? It'd be the perfect audience.
Oh, are you the MC for it, are you?
Yeah.
Is Bomber tootied up, Bomber Bradbury?
Oh, I don't know. He hasn't indicated.
And so this is a national, anti-national party.
No. This is the day of action against the national government.
Oh, okay. Well, look, I'll mobilise a couple of the people at Mana and we'll work out something. You want to get a hold of the Greens and Labour and get everyone involved. Make this a cross-party sort of big thing.
Actually, I was thinking of going a different way, because this isn't necessarily about politics. This is about the national government and specificity. What I want to do is have activists who are very deeply versed in some of the crimes and scumbaggery in graphic detail of the national government, things that John Key has been involved in, the laws that have been broken, procedural violations, and things of that nature that actually give us a very close-knit view of how this country is actually truly run by John Key and the national government. Because once people know how they actually operate from the horse's mouth, the people who have seen it, the people who have experienced it firsthand, I think that people will never, ever really consider voting John Key ever again. And all the parties, I'd love them to be there and take part, and there'll be a an open mic and so on and so forth. And that's what I really want to do. I want to give this this sort of platform to the activists who've really been fighting hard to expose their scumbaggery and don't actually have a dog in the fight other than the country as a whole. As Thomas Paine once said, a patriot's duty is to protect his country from his government.
Mm-mm. Well, unfortunately, Vinny, I honestly believe as next year this is going to go into a fourth national government. And it's the farmers and the rural areas that vote in national. And, yeah, it's really, I think people can't see past the smile and that what the Prime Minister is about. I think they just fall for the smile. And he's the most popular national Prime Minister ever in the history of national. He's got the charisma. And if we can get past that, New Zealanders collectively, then we might be able to take this country back.
Yeah. We're in more debt now than we ever have been. We were doing quite well till John Key came on the scene. He used to sell derivatives, debt packets in a pinch, AAA rated, conning people as a cinch. He was the Federal Reserve representative for Merrill Lynch. He's a banker. A banker! You know what that rhymes with? That's right. Tanker. An oil tanker on the coastlines of Christchurch. Rebuilding contracts left the people in the lurch. Talking earthquake recovery and economic revival. Some people down there are struggling for survival, shivering in cold, trapped in the red zone, where refused insurance means you lose your home. But people love him, want to shake his hand. He's Teflon John, built the country on sand. They gave us a super city, corrupt corporate coup, criminal business want my city unglued. You demonized, stole from, and defamed elderly Alan Hubbard, who died just before revealing the skeletons in your cupboard.
Wow, Vinny, you're the man.
I don't know about you, bro, but I just there's something that it feels really great to diss John Key. I don't know. I guess some kind of personal satisfaction about, you know, just doing that whoosh.
Well, what we need to really be looking at is looking at David Cunliffe and getting them to form a coalition. Because what the problem with Labor I see at the moment is they're still living in first-past-the-post mentality, when they should be looking at coalition mentality of getting the whole coalition of Labor, Greens, and Mana to work collectively to defeat this national government. If he cannot unite these three factions within the first 100 days of his leadership, it's a fourth term Labour government. I'm sorry, that's the reality.
I do think so. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Trinder is my guest. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. A very special guest is Joe Trinder. Now, we have a Facebook kind of link thingy to give out, just in case you want to get involved in the battle down there in Māngere, you know. Facebook.com/mana.māngere branch. That's mana.māngere branch after Facebook.com, just in case you wanted to know that. Okay, Joe. We could delve into the super city itself. And I don't know about anybody else, but as far as I saw, what they did was they took something like $28 billion with the public assets and then put them into private hands so that these CCO, corporate-controlled organizations, could seize control of the city. That's all I saw.
Carry on.
No, you... you carry
well, on. Well, I think you're absolutely right, Vinny. I think that the super city is an absolute failure and that a lot of the ratepayers out there should be really glad that we lost the America's Cup, because the amount of development that would have happened that would have been at the expense of a lot of the ratepayers would have been extraordinary. They would have ramped up our rates for things that wouldn't have been spent down the waterfront. I guarantee you that. And I'll give you examples of why the super city is a failure. Well, first off, when they went to join Monaco and also Auckland City together, Auckland City had sold all its shares at Auckland Airport, so it didn't own any of it. But what had happened is Monaco City had kept its shares, and it was running at a profit. It was making huge money. So what Auckland City wanted to do was combine with Monaco to also get all that income that was coming out of those airport shares. And so just creating the super city, Auckland City managed to gain itself a lot of wealth. And also Monaco was actually financially far better than any of the other city councils that were out there. So what we're seeing now in the super city is the brown communities out in South Auckland, they're having to now carry the can for the whole super city. So, for example, us here in Māngere, we're having Amity Option 4 with the motorway running through us. There was the prison out in Marurewa that the local board tried to fight against, and all good credit to the local board for trying to fight it and making submissions, but at the end of the day, they couldn't do it. They had no control over it. So the super city is absolutely disempowering communities that have predominantly Polynesian communities and also Māori communities as well that are in South Auckland. And I think that we need to really review the super city, either get or change of mayor. Yeah. Do you think that there is an issue here?
The question for me is, who has the control? Is the control concentrated at the top, or is it shared down the bottom? And when I see the structure of the super city, there is no sharing down the bottom. It is all concentrated at the top, which is the direct opposite of what I want a city governance to be. The smaller and more localized those particular branches of government are, the more likely they are to be familiar and receptive to the concerns of their local boroughs and so on and so forth. You know, everybody wants to put everything into one, you know, have one solution for everything, and I don't think so. I think the one solution to everything is kind of just eternal vigilance and actual connection with the community. Your local representatives have to be the kind of people on your street, you know, who come over and have a chat to you or a cup of tea or something like that. You can't have a cup of tea with everybody if you're mayor of 1.5 million people, can you, bro?
No, not at all.
Yeah. The smaller, the better. That's how things really should be governed, and everybody starts looking after their own backyard, and nobody gets to take over the whole fracking show with their corrupt scumbaggery.
Well, that's precisely right. And what we've got now, the situation is that Jerry Brownlee can pour so much influence over the whole super city because he only has to manipulate one city council. He doesn't have to go after three or four city councils to get what he wants in motorways done and transport. So it's not working out. The super city is a complete failure for communities in South Auckland.
Yeah, Jerry Brownlee pours on the influence like he pours on the gravy.
Well, one example of it, he runs CERA down in Christchurch, you know, for the recovery of the earthquakes.
I have heard so many bad things about this.
Yeah, so we've got predominantly Pākehā communities in Christchurch that are struggling with CERA, let alone brown communities in South Auckland that are led by his decisions. So, you know, really, who's running the super city? Is it central government or is it local government?
Or is it the corporations that own both of them?
Yeah. Well, how much are they pouring into the National Party's campaign funds?
I had asked one time at the National Party website to send me a list of their contributions over $10,000 that have to be declared. I didn't get a reply. I was quite miffed about that.
Golly gosh, I wonder why not.
Have you ever heard of an old phrase, pay the piper, call the tune?
No, I've never heard.
Yeah. Pay the piper, call the tune means if you're the one fronting the money, you get to tell them what song to sing.
Well, that makes sense.
And that's what these politicians and all these candidates and things like that that are backed by the big corporate scumbaggery agents of these transnational mafioso bankster scumbaggery, I think. They're just being paid and they're singing us a little song, sing us to sleep while they stab us in the back in the dead of the night.
Yeah. one of the things I would like to talk to you about, Vinny, is the recent leadership that change that they had in Labor. Oh, how do you feel about that?
I just want to make a comparison. So we've got John Key, who's, you know, evil bankster scumbag. And then we have David Cunliffe, educated at Harvard. And he lives in Herne Bay, which is one of the swankiest suburbs. Look at John Key. He lives in Parnell, which is one of the swankiest suburbs in Auckland. He's also an MP for Helensville, which is out in West Auckland. And what's his name? David Cunliffe is also an MP for West Auckland and doesn't actually live there. Have you noticed a connection here? That there's actually really not a whole heap of difference between them? And incidentally, David Cunliffe pushes carbon tax legislation, which kind of destroys a lot of the old local industry and so on and so forth, and doesn't actually reduce the carbon outtake, really, and just makes a whole bunch of money for financial trading scum. Well, guess who David Cunliffe is married to? The head of the New Zealand Carbon Exchange.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's because she doesn't use the last name Cunliffe. She uses her maiden name.
What is the New Zealand Carbon Exchange?
It's the place where all your carbon tax money goes. All the 5 cents on the dollar for the petrol and everything like that that we've been paying. Yep, goes into this carbon tax fund. And it just goes out into all these different UN organizations so they can build an apparatus for a global government, more or less.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the recent leadership election in Labor, they had three candidates. They had Shane Jones, they had Grant Robinson, and they also had David Cunliffe. And I was quite interested in the other two candidates that were there. Grant Robinson, he is married to a fine gentleman called Alf Kawai, and I thought that some of the topics that he brought up were fantastic. And I think he also has a lot of charisma, Grant Robinson. How do you feel about Grant Robinson?
Don't know. Don't know.
Yeah. And also there was Shane Jones. And the one we feared the most at Mana was Shane Jones, because if they managed to get a Māori leader in charge of the Labour Party, we would have been decimated overnight. I mean, just he would have defeated us in vast electorates across the Māori electorates. And so we really like Shane, but it would have done a lot of damage to us politically. And it would have helped Labour also get back those Māori seats that it lost in the foreshore debate, seabed and foreshore controversy, yeah.
See, this is an interesting part about politics. The person who you actually really like is the person you don't want in, because it means that you won't get in. Doesn't that strike you as a really terrible system in order to represent people?
Yeah, well, Labour had a faction within itself called the ABCs, or they said anyone but Cunliffe. And, you know, I kind of understood where that faction was coming from. I understood.
What faction was coming from? Were they coming from that for the same reason I was, or what? What were the reasons they didn't like?
Personality conflicts, from what I believe, is maybe Mr. Cunliffe, he doesn't have the rapport with all of the membership, all of his caucus. He didn't have that sort of rapport, whereas Mr. Grant Robinson, he's a really friendly chap, he's easygoing, and so he kind of managed to get that rapport with the caucus. Yeah.
So basically, it's a popularity contest.
Well, yeah, I guess you've got the ABCs could be feathering their own nests in some sort of sense, but...
Are they members by chance of Parliamentarians for Global Action?
I'm not sure what that is. Can you explain what it is?
It's a organisation where you have to be an elected member of Parliament in an alleged democratic country in order to get in. And also the second requirement in order to get into this club is you have to pay by credit card. They have conferences all around the world about sustainable development and all of these policies. Basically, it's a global sort of brainwashing syndicate that just gets all of the politicians that are currently ruling your countries today into the similar mode of thinking of privatization and more or less centralization of power.
Is Ruth Richardson and also Roger Douglas part of that organisation?
I would probably say so. Many members from Labour and National, they've got both sides of the House that belong to this, and usually the more prominent members, usually the ones who push their agenda the hardest is the one who get them through in Parliament. I think Winston Peters said that or something.
So is it policies based on neoliberalism, selling state-owned assets?
Yeah.
That sort of...
More or less anything that... you know how the grand idea of... one of the grand ideas, allegedly, of hardcore communism is that there wouldn't be any borders, right? And everything would be returned to the people. Well, it's kind of like reverse that, where there aren't any borders, except there's no mobility between them because everybody's broke as frack and there's an elite that dominates everything.
Well, okay.
Global syndicate, yeah.
Is Mr. Cunliffe part of this organisation, do you think?
That's what I want to know. I would probably say so. I would assume yes until I have the evidence that the answer's no. That's one thing that a number of elections have taught me, is that all of the people that are put in front of you often have a backstory, and unfortunately our media is so shocking at reporting on the backstory of these people and what all their connections are, who the players involved behind their rise into this position of leader. These are the things that are very crucial into telling what the personality and possibility of the policies that these people would be perpetrating on us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know what you mean.
A slug leaves a trail, mate.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And so with Mr. Cunliffe, there's a lot of people out there in the community I've spoken to, and there's just something they just don't trust about him. They've just got their instincts are saying there's something wrong here about this guy. He could be the next Prime Minister of New Zealand, but there's something that we don't know. Do your instincts tell you something about this man, that something's not right?
He's a member of the Labour Party.
Yeah.
I mean, have a look at the long list of Labour parties. They've fracked this country to no end, just as much as National have over the last few decades, because they both implement similar freaking policy, and people think that the next time they vote for change, and you notice how every single government that wins votes on change, it doesn't freaking matter, ladies and gentlemen. They're just lying to you. Stop voting for those bigger parties, man. They're co-opted. We'll be right back after the break. Oh yeah, welcome back. We're jamming big monkey wrench into the machine. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's my final segment here with Joe Trinder, and just a reminder to those listening to the broadcast, this is a listener-supported show. What I want is 500 people to donate $5 a month. That gives me a basic, reasonable income so I can go out and actually cover all these events and stuff like that, have no problems paying for gas or buying an activist a camera when they really, really need it, when they're going perhaps even overseas to different conferences and so on and so forth, and they want to bring back footage, put it on the web, that kind of thing. They lack the editing skill, frack, I'll do it for them. They lack the YouTube channel that can upload this or the internet connection that has that kind of ability, I'll do it for them. This is how we make the media freaking work, by taking personal responsibility for the problem at hand. The problem with New Zealand media is that you don't get to hear the truth in long form. You don't get to hear all of the devilish details. You don't get to hear the in-depth discussion that actually uses facts, representations of reality, rather than a big, confused mess of half-truths and outright lies. I seek to change that media environment in New Zealand by making the activists themselves, the people who have known what they've been talking about for years, the reporters. You give them the coverage that they need to get the truth out, and I can guarantee you this system, all of its intricate detail, will be heard and will be changed. Believe it, as I do, and go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Click the subscribe button, $5 a month is all I'm asking. And there's also a KiwiBank account there as well if you want to set up an automatic payment. If you support this kind of media, if you support the truth getting out there, if you support liberty, freedom, transparency, and the exposure of scumbaggery, then definitely your best bet, in New Zealand at least, is me. I'm getting this done because it needs to be done for lack of a better option. Right, Joe, back on to you.
Okay, Vinny, I'd like to talk about the Labour Party. Well, my family have voted for the Labour Party since the 1930s on both parents' side. The Labour Party, I feel that it's changed a lot since its inception. And in 1984, it got into Rogernomics and neoliberalism of selling state-owned assets. And it's changed since Mickey Savage's day. Well, when it first began, it was a socialist party and also semi-communist. And it was created out of the Black Ball Miners' strike back in the early 1900s. And the last working class prime minister that New Zealand had is Norman Kirk. And ever since then, they've just had professional lawyers or investment bankers and that ilk of sort of person who hasn't actually worked a day like us average people do. So I believe that Mickey Savage was a good man. I honestly, I believe that. When you take people like Helen Clark, who was the last Labor Prime Minister, she was the daughter of a National Party president. What she's done, and also Roger Douglas and neoliberalism, they've moved the Labor Party to the centre from its original groundings of where it was. And I also think that David Cunliffe is prepared to go and take that battle into the centre as well. So what's happened is they've left the far left of politics alone, and they've stopped their core sort of union socialist policies that they originally formed on. And that's where Mana comes in. That's what we are. We're a socialist party that is also has an investment in indigenous rights. So we're a movement of the people, and we're also socialist. And I guarantee you today that if Mickey Savage was alive today, he would join Mana and not Labor. Because those are we carry the types of policies that he originally went after back in the 1930s, 1940s. And Labor's gone so far centre that what's the difference between Labor and National anymore? Does anyone know? Does anyone in Labor even know that?
I was thinking that you really only need to ask two questions. What you want enforced out of a party. So I think that parties should be kept at their word. If they promise something, they kind of have to frickin' deliver it, don't you think? The real problem is misrepresentation of policy, I see. Everything that has been done to this country since the 1980s, since the first kind of round of Rogernomics, maybe even before then with Muldoon. Apparently New Zealand gave its issuance of currency over to a more privately run organisation, something that's got shares in it, like the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, for example. And I think the same thing happened in the United States when they instituted the Federal Reserve. Instead of the people issuing a public currency and regulating its value, you have bankers, private bankers, creating the money up out of thin air and then charging interest to you, but not printing the interest. So it's mathematically impossible to ever repay the debt. And then they get you in debt, that's when they start taking your national assets, that's when they start privatizing your prisons, that's when they start, you know, X, Y, Z. I think the instrument here, the main cause of all this scumbaggery, is foreign banking debt, which is made up, and we don't frickin' need it. We should pull in Iceland.
Yeah, well, if you look at New Zealand's debt since this national government's taken over, we started off at approximately government debt. This is not including all other private debt or what companies get. This is purely government debt. We started off at around about $25 billion. So we had a way to pay it off. Now we've gone up to $50 billion since John Key, to $55 billion since John Key's taken power. So what he's done is he's doubled our government international debt.
In other words, by himself, John Key has gotten this country into more debt than all previous prime ministers combined.
That's it. And an example of this is if in Australia, Tony Abbott's taken over, the Australians have got $300 billion in debt, and they are concerned. They're really worried. The difference between Australia and New Zealand is we have about 4 million population, and they've got around about 26 to 30 million. They've got the population to pay it off, and we don't have the population to pay off $50 billion of government debt. Now, compare $50 billion to their $300 billion. It's in comparison, we're in a lot of debt.
Yeah. It's like six times the debt paid off by 26 times the population. It's just not comparable whatsoever, you know. Oh, wait. I've got the numbers wrong there. But the point still stands. And I do believe that the World Bank had some documents leaked. If you want to research anything about government policy, you need to read this document. It's very, very interesting. It was leaked out of the World Bank, and it says 111 rules for privatizing a country. every single thing that this country has gone through since like 20 years before that document has been released has been run like a frickin' playbook. And now we're up to almost the end of the playbook where they're privatizing all the national strategic reserves, all of the resource grabbing, all of the control of the infrastructure, control over the electricity and the water supplies and so on and so forth. Oh, yeah. It's frickin' happening. The country's being bought out by banks who get to make money up. Isn't that a magic moment, magic trick? Dig this. They only have to have 10% in reserves. They can make up 90% of the money. And anytime anybody comes in for a personal loan, they don't actually have the money to loan them. They just take their signature and then make it up on a computer. They're causing inflation at a massive level. All this money's coming into circulation and there's nothing to soak it up. That's why the costs of everything are ballooning so dramatically as well. There's a real central core here. The reason why an economy runs, the reason why a country even survives is because of the flow of money. And unfortunately, that flow has been channeled so that we get the debt and they get the wealth. This is the core country. This is the core problem in this country and pretty much all others. What is Mana going to do to address that?
Well, what I'd like to see is Roger Douglas initially was advised by Treasury on neoliberal policies. And what we need to do is we need to look at the people who Treasury are employing and ask every single employee, go through every single employee, go, do you support neoliberalism? And if any of them say yes, you fire them on the spot. We've got to clean out Treasury and get rid of people that actually believe in neoliberalism. They're the most dangerous people that could have advised Roger Douglas on his Rogernomics policy. And what they believe in is they believe in short-term gains and not long-term investment. And that's what we need to do as an economy. We need to live here like we're looking after our children's investment and future generations. Not just this quick, let's sell everything and get a quick buck, because it's dangerous. Yeah,
it is indeed very dangerous. And it's back on the John Key rap. He signed us up to NATO, bro. That's in the North Atlantic. Making speeches at the UN, Mr. Key, you're just pedantic. Syria was gassed by the West-funded rebels, financed and trained by American devils. Want another invasion of a sovereign state, Mr. Key, with a pipeline deal worth $700 billion with a B. Over here, you cut benefits and destroy the judiciary. That kind of behavior gets me feeling revolutionary. Locking up activists, surveil lawful activity, because you want power for yourself, have it reside in exclusivity. You're not a national treasure, you're a national disgrace. Can someone please wipe that smile off his face? You're a liar, I got proof, now you have no outs. You're the prime sinister, of that I have no doubts. Thank you for listening to the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Shot, Biddy.
Yeah. Exposed scumbaggery all day, every day at www.thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Joe Trinder, thank you very much. We'll see you again.